Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to A Celtic State of Mind. It's Thursday afternoon. I'm Paul Don Dykes, and today I'm joined by John Paul Mason and Kevin Graham. Something of the old school, guys. Remember all those years ago we met up in Stirling for a wee chat about Celtic and JP Celtic support and life? And here we are, all these years later. Now, I'm going to start right off the bat, JP, that jersey behind you. Good memories and bad, isn't it? It took us through a kind of sticky patch and ushered in a new era, that jersey.
Yeah, so you could say it's fitting for the current scenario, potentially. But I know, I do you remember that came out and it was, and then they recalled it because there was something wrong with the material?
I do remember that, yes.
So obviously that's the second run. The NTL hasn't really survived well on the jersey, but I don't think it's... Is that still even a company? I don't know.
That's a good point. I've never seen hide nor hair of them for a long time. They've probably been bought by some other multi-corporation.
I think they were took over by BT quite soon after the sponsorship ended with Celtic.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it takes us from the dark old days of Ayo Berkovic and then takes us into the Martin O'Neill era, Kev, and we were away, the blessed Martin. Can I just say... Yes, I have been banging on about this all week, but no wonder, what a night it was, JP. And by your question itself, before it even got an answer, was getting applause in the room. Brilliant. Good night, wasn't it?
It was brilliant. I have to be honest. I, you know, when you've done something like that with him already, you do wonder like if it's just going to be the same again. But it definitely wasn't. Like, I don't know if you'd been... going proper Columbo with your questioning, but like it wasn't the same material we were covering. Like that story you told about John Robertson and the Cologne game was, has that been spoken about? I've not seen every single podcast.
He's not mentioned that.
No. I mean, like, has it been mentioned like this week or anything like that? Like, is anybody...
No, it hasn't. It hasn't, JP. But I felt it was just emotionally filled when he was telling that story, wasn't it? It was incredible.
Well, the long and short of it was John Robertson lost his sister and her husband in a car accident about 5 or 6 days before. Was it a quarter final in European Cup? It was latter stages.
I think it was the semi final, JP.
The semi.
Nottingham
Forest were playing Cologne, and Brian Clough said to him, "Look, understand if you don't want to play. You know, I know that there's a lot going on in your mind right now." And John Robertson put his hand up and said, "No, I want to play." And then he scored a diving header in the game to put them 3-2 up. And Martin O'Neill was just like, I think he just had this kind of who cares attitude about everything. He was just like, well, you know, and would he have scored that goal had he not played in that game? Well, obviously he wouldn't have scored the goal if he hadn't played in the game, but would he have scored the goal if he didn't have that kind of going on in his life? Possibly not. So it shows the measure of the guy that he played in that game, and it took Nottingham Forest to the European Cup final, first of two.
Unbelievable story, but you're right. And when he was telling the story, JP, I was thinking of Paul Wilson. I remember not the actual game, but talking to Paul Wilson about the 1975 Scottish Cup final, Billy McNeil's final game. He was the hero, Paul Wilson, wasn't he, that season? And he had just got word that his mother had passed away. So, you know, he was able to make the decision himself whether or not he played.
he went on and he was a match winner against Airdrie in the 75 Cup final. So, great night. Great question by JP. And a lot of other great nights coming up. We're going to be announcing them very, very soon. Maybe at the end of this week, in actual fact. And there's a few comments coming in already, Kevin Graham, around the running tagline. Does Brendan have the players and the moves to win this title fight? Paul McLean comes in and says, indeed he does. And but Jap Stam hasn't aged well. And of course, Paul, you're talking about the thumbnail that we've used. I was just saying to Kev and JP, I am officially addicted to AI graphic generation. So there's going to be a lot more of that kind of thing coming. Kev, if you're looking, if you're Brendan Rodgers and you're looking at that squad, first and foremost, let's talk about the players. Brendan must be looking at that squad and thinking he does have the players to win this title fight, I would suggest. What's your thoughts on that, Kev?
Two things before I get to that. NTL changed their name to Virgin Media in 2007. Somebody's telling in the comments, so there we go. The kit, JP's kit there, was changed in the 2001 season on St. Patrick's Day. They released the new kit that we won the treble in.
Yep. So midway through
the season. That's the last time I can ever remember a kit, apart from the Seville season, being changed during the season. So yeah, we wore that in the 6-2 game. Then when we humped them 3-0 at Ibrox, we were wearing a different kit in the exact same season.
And it's the kit with the white panels under the arms, if I'm right.
The white panels underneath,
Yeah. You've read the Celtic jersey, Kev, haven't you?
I've got it.
You've looked at the pictures, right? That reminds me, by the way, the best review I've ever had about that book, right, on Amazon, and it was a verified purchase, so whoever bought it has got the right to review the thing. He says, it was made out to be a history book, it's fully pictures. It's a photographic history of the Celtic jersey, and this guy's moaning that there's too many photos. Kev, we're in a world, we're in a society now, where no matter what happens, you're going to moan about it, aren't you? No, you.
Especially me. Rodgers needs to believe that he's got the squad to get him over the line, because it doesn't matter what I say, what you say, what JP says. He's made certain decisions all season that we all agree or disagree with or agree with him, and he's not going to change now. Nothing's going to change now, so he's got to believe that that squad can get him over the line. He's got to believe that whatever he does can get us over the line as well, eh? And he seems quite relaxed about it, eh? He seems almost jovial about it, where you could probably say that other managers are kind of losing their heads a wee bit, bringing up. What I have noticed, Dave, I've had to buy a paper the last couple of days, because see how you've been talking about the old guys getting their roles and walking down the road with their papers and all of that.
Your dad's one of
those. My dad's in the hospital at the moment, so he likes a paper. Mm-hmm. So I have to take a paper in. And every single day that I've bought a paper, there's always been a Rangers good news story on the back page.
Mm.
It's kind of scary how obvious it is when you haven't bought a paper in 20-odd years.
Yep.
Then when you actually see, instead of the Matt O'Reilly story being on the back page, it was a Tavernier talking about how he's going to note back the fake money for Saudi and he's going to stay there. Then the following day, it's about Jack Butland saying he wants to stay and help Rangers win things on that. How obvious is this? Then right up at the wee corner bit, you've got the story about Matt O'Reilly no committing to Celtic when he doesn't say such a thing. He just says that he's concentrating the end of the season. I went, how obvious is absolute this? So Rodgers has kind of blanked all of that out, eh?
He has
blanked all of that out, and I think the squad are kind of blanked out for it as well, eh? So, we've got to try and get over the line, eh? And he's got to believe that he's got the squad to get over the line, no matter how many doubts that we've got to get over the line, eh?
I'm going to use an example, Kev, right? Because you've said something that I've already mentioned this week, and that's around the fact that we've got the personnel that we're going to have to run with. But JP, here's the thing, right? Because the example that we were talking about was Liam Scales. And we're talking about, right, you know what? He's divided opinion all season. It's not a new thing. But I think the level of criticism has gone up a few notches in the last few weeks. If you were to read James McKenzie's post-match, he had Liam Scales as one of the best players on the park. And that just shows you how he divides opinion, that player. But I was of the view, JP, that he's not going to change it now because I don't think that we've got someone in the squad that you can rely on to step in and do better. Now, the obvious one is Novroshky, but I think there's a debate to be had. Has he proven himself over a period of time to be able to do that? There's obviously something holding Brendan Rodgers back from throwing him in. There is an example of him doing it recently, though, and that's with Jamesy Forrest. Slightly different in that Forrest has got quite a lot of credit in the bank, obviously. JP, do you subscribe to the fact that we're just going to have to run with what we've got? Or do you think there's any area of that team that you can tinker with? I mean, I'm still thinking the wings. And I'm leading into a discussion around Lewis Palmer. I got a good email just to say, listen, you know what? Palmer's been kind of lumped in with Yang. Whenever we're talking about wingers, it's Yang and Palmer. And it's like they've now worked out almost as a double act. But actually, if you separate them, Palmer's data would suggest otherwise. He's just maybe not playing well just now. Do you think there are changes, JP, that Brendan can make to inject some life into areas of the team like James Forrest has done?
Well, I think the James Forrest inclusion was based on the fact that he wasn't really getting out of Yang or Palmer what he wants. I mean, Yang started against Aberdeen at Hampden and I did not go too hard on him because I didn't think the team played well in the first half as a whole. So kind of unfair to just single him out. But the rest of the team had the potential to sort of play their way out of that bad first half. And I don't think that Yang has that. So he's obviously, he sees everybody in training every day. He sees Forrest potentially flying in training, knows that he can come in and do a job, knows that it's a role that he's played before where he's been relied upon in big games. He played him at the Olympic Stadium in Rome. And that, it was after that game that I kind of went, right, I don't think Forrest is a Champions League player anymore. Like, to be fair to him, he did have Yang on the other side in that game. Would it have made a difference if Maeda had been on the other side in that game and not Yang in terms of that balance? Because everyone always talks about how Maeda brought out the best in Jota because of the different skill sets that they have, and Jota brought out the best in Maeda because, you know, we know what Maeda brings to the table. So I think the Forrest inclusion was not quite a sort of frantic throw of the dice. It was more a case of, I know what this guy can do. I've seen him do it in training. What we need is what he can bring. And then he brings it at the weekend with two really good goals. The first one of which was outstanding. I mean, probably one of the best goals he's scored in his career, I would say. I mean, like a snapshot volley into the bottom corner, virtually no movement on the ball. It was brilliant. So yeah. I'm really pleased for James Forrest because I guess I have defended him. I got a message from the guy that sits behind me and he's like, oh, well done on your continued defence of James Forrest. And I was like, well, I've just never seen him as being somebody that should be slagged or, you know, heavily criticised. I mean, some people hate James Forrest in the Celtic support and it's wild to me. So what did all those people do? You know, the people that hated Mikey Johnson when he scored those two goals at Dundee, weirdly enough, in the same fixture, and he scored those two goals. I'm right in saying that, right? It was Dundee.
Yeah.
People were like, oh, well, it's only Dundee, blah, blah, blah. Where's he done it in the other games? James Forrest's two goals won us that game. And a must-win game, he scored those two goals. So all the people that give him such a hard time, what did they do on Sunday? Did they implode? Did they stay silent? Did they give him any praise at all? Do you know, that's what frustrated me about that. But to answer your question, in a roundabout way, I don't think that Liam Scales deserves to be dropped ahead of anybody else that's in those ranks because he's not trusted anybody else all season. Navrotsky's been fit at other points in the season and he's not been brought in. And I think given Liam Scales' step up to the plate this season, it wasn't his fault that our recruitment was bad in the summer. He was just asked to play. Rodgers trusted him straight away, was talking about him fondly in one of the pre-season friendlies. And you had an idea at that point that Liam Scales was going to feature this season, not to the extent of playing in every single Champions League game and pretty much every single domestic game as well, which is why when I was asked on Sunday, who's your player of the season, I said there's a strong argument for William Scales. Now, that'll be completely ridiculed by some people who hate William Scales, or not hate him, but like think he's an absolute calamity and everything else. But the guy's been there through the thick and thin of it all season. Whenever he's 40s, his last-ditch tackling and everything else. But you need somebody like that in your team to put in those last-ditch tackles. I would really, really love an Alan Morrison-style assessment of William Scales' contribution to this season at the end of the season. And if he's got a league winner's medal in his hand, then he's contributed more than most to a successful season if we ever were to have it.
Absolutely. And when you're talking about the data, obviously Celtic are looking at that, JP, on a daily basis when they're looking at the start 11, but they're also looking at the conditioning of the players. And, you know, I brought up a thing yesterday, Kev, in relation to Mike Navroski, and I think that things are going to have to change this pre-season, because it's not a case now of going out and buying a player at that kind of price and thinking that's a big investment, because it's not. It's actually not anymore. I mean, for £3 million, you're going to get Lagerbjerg. For £4 million plus, you're going to get Navroski. For £2 million, you're going to get Tilio. That, if you're going to shop in those markets more often than not, you're going to get a player of that ilk, that quality, and perhaps you won't use them as much. But one thing that astonished me when I was looking into it, just base level data, Kev, was that Mike Navroski, in his entirety of his senior career, has played 75 games of football. Now, he's not 19. He's 23 years of age. He's not played a lot of football. And then you look at somebody like Liam Scales, who, you know, he's having one of those seasons where, if you had said at the beginning of the season, Liam Scales was going to play nearly 50 games for Celtic this season, no one would have believed that. Nobody would have believed that, right? We've brought in a guy at 4.3 million. He's barely kicked a ball, Kev. But I think it's a double kind of point I'm making here. The first one is, I think I agree with JP in that Liam Scales deserves his place. I wouldn't be dropping him. I think to drop him is a bigger risk. And actually, if Brendan Rodgers was to drop him, he'd probably play Stephen Welsh anyway, going by previous games where Scales wasn't available. But the second point I'm making, Kevin, this is something that we're going to be taking into the pre-season here in the summer transfer window, is that, you know, we've been conditioned into thinking that 4.3 is a big money buy for Celtic now. It gets you nothing. It actually does not get you the quality that you need, Kev.
Right, I've changed my mic, so hopefully it's a bit better.
Aye, it was just a wee bit scratchy, Kev. We like to try and, a bit like Brendan, we try to bring quality to the table.
Aye. Bottom line, I've criticised Scales. I'm not going to go back. I was very, very harsh on him after the semi-final, and I'm not going to go back on that. I thought he had a poor game at the semi-final, and I thought that he's going to get targeted for now at the end of the season. But the bottom line is, if we had paid £4.3 million for Liam Scales at the start of the season, we would be raving about him, and we would be talking about his dip in form now is a dip in form with a new signing coming in who's just adjusting to the Scottish game. That's it, bottom line. Nobody would argue about it. But the thing is Liam Scales, he was nearly at the door. There is a sort of narrative already about Liam Scales that nobody's going to change. But if we had signed him in the summer for £4 million, we would have been saying, it was a great signing.
Money well spent. Do you agree with us, JP? If we had signed Leo Scalacci and he was £4.3 million, would we be sitting here going, that was a good bit of business?
I don't think everybody would, because obviously there has been moments where he has looked a bit shaky. There's no doubts about that. But you've got to remember, this is the first time he's been through the course and distance in a season with a club as big as Celtic going for a title with a lot of money on the line. And he's the guy at the back that's got to make the tackles and stop goals. And it doesn't help when you get folk like Palmer giving away the ball to allow those crosses to come in. I don't know what's going on with him, but I don't know if he's alluded to something maybe in his personal life. And if that's the case, then you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. But I think if Liam Scales was an Italian young under 21 player or whatever, you've got to look at the fact that he's been trusted by a manager with the experience of Brendan Rodgers throughout this season in big games, Champions League games, and that's the kind of bottom line in it. And I think the fact that he's still here and still playing, played on Sunday, is a marker of the fact that he's been trusted. And if you've got the trust of a manager like Brendan Rodgers, that says quite a lot about you as a player and a character and a person. Because he doesn't suffer poor personalities at all. You've seen it in the past. You've seen it this season. I don't think he would. I don't think he would play Scales out of some sort of flawed kind of reliance or whatever. It's because he trusts him.
And some people say about the new signings, Kev, 7.5 million making a point by playing Liam Scales. I don't buy that, because you can lose your job by making a point, you know, against the recruitment team or the board. I don't buy that. So I just don't think he rates the other two guys.
I wouldn't put it past Rodgers to make a point like that, because I think he made the point with Boyata before and that. I think he's got previous the day in that, but I completely agree with JP. The bottom line is, no matter Liam Scales' ability going forward and what Brendan Rodgers thinks about Liam Scales' ability going forward, because we don't know what's going to happen in the summer. At the moment, there's two centre halves that Brendan Rodgers absolutely trusts, and it's Cameron Carter-Vickers and Liam Scales.
Yeah.
And there's nothing we can do about it. And yes, we can say Narowski hasn't done enough. We haven't seen enough of him. That's because Rodgers trusts Scales.
Yeah.
We can't say about Lagerby Elker, because we haven't got a clue what he's absolutely done. Did he eat Brendan Rodgers' Cocoa Pops or something like that? We haven't got a clue. And Stephen Melch.
I've just got a vision of the breakfast time at Lerickstown there, and it's the variety seven pack. That would have annoyed me, JP, if somebody took the Cocoa Pops, because you're always left with the Rice Krispies, right?
So I would have been after the Ricicles, but they didn't exist anymore.
They were like Rice Krispies with sugar, right?
Nah.
Old school, absolutely.
Stop them.
Right, I mean, we've got to the bottom of why Lagerbelk's not playing. Well done, Kev.
But we don't know. Like, we know what's going to happen. We know what's going to happen Saturday. And we know what's going to happen the following Saturday. They're going to overload the back post to put pressure on Scales and Taylor. Last minute against Dundee, there was that many guys on that back post that actually got on the road each other. Dundee actually played that all wrong, and there was Matt O'Reilly was there, and there was a whole load of Celtic players, a whole lot of Dundee players there, and the boy Mickey Mellon didn't actually really have a chance because there was that many bodies there, and that is what's going to happen. Unfortunately, a lot of the teams haven't got somebody as half decent as Junior Hoylett to actually put in two absolutely cracking balls. Yeah, it has to be spot on. The two goals that Aberdeen scored were absolutely spot on. They were great crosses. Mm-hmm. Yes, we could have done better. But that's what's going to happen. There's going to be overloads on the left-hand side. And we're going to have heart in our mouths moment over the next four games. Hopefully it's only two games and it's done and dusted, and the last two are just hang me like that. But I think Scales stood up on Sunday. I think he did. He's got a mistake in him. He's got a slack pass in him. He's not comfortable taking the ball forward. He's got all these failings, but we can't change nothing. The manager trusts him. Mm. And the manager's putting his reputation on the line by playing Liam Scales. And Liam Scales is doing something that I've never done. So I can't be too harsh on the guy, eh? Even though I have been previously. Even though I have been, like, complete and utterly previously.
No, but Kev, I think that's what happens when you're a football fan watching your team. You know, you criticise players if they don't play, but I don't think there's a problem with that. And there's been periods of this season where criticism's been merited. But I think the issue we've got is Brendan Rodgers doesn't have someone, like you say, that he can trust to bring in. Otherwise, Scales might have been dropped at some point. I mean, I found it absurd, right, that we were going into games like the 1-1 game at Celtic Park, JP, where we lost at 93rd minute the 93rd minute equaliser. Was it the boy Watson that scored, I think, wasn't it? Decent player for Kirk. Was it Watson that scored? I think it was. Well, back post. Same area of the park, different left back. And it was Burnaby. And at that point, Burnaby was getting, you know, in the squads. He's on the bench. He played in that. He was on the park when that goal was scored, right? And now he's gone, banished. He's sitting on a bench somewhere in Brazil. JP, you mentioned earlier on about Palma. I'm not aware why would we be, and we probably shouldn't be, of any personal issues off the park. We just think about...
It was from an Instagram. From an Instagram post or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing with Palma is, and I'm bringing this in because an Axon viewer who's a long-time viewer actually on A Celtic State of Mind, emailed us just to say, listen, I'm not really using the socials at the moment, but here's a wee point to consider on Palmer. So we're jumping into the kind of wings here, because I do think that as much as Kevin's right, the defence, the back five's not going to change if they're fit. That's the back five for the remainder of the fixtures. But on the wings, I think we've got a different scenario entirely, because every so often you're thinking, oh, wait a minute, he's a stick on. Kuhn started playing well, and then his form dips a bit. You've got to bring in Forrest on the left because Maeda's out. Palmer has had periods of this season where he has done the business. He has scored goals. He has created goals. And he's done it in the Champions League as well as domestically. His form dips. You bring in Yang, a couple of wee flashes for Yang, his form. So I think the wings are definitely up for debate. And it comes down for me, JP, to whoever's on form. So the point that was made by Stephen, a long-time listener to Axon, was the fact that Yang and Palmer kind of lumped into this rejects or flops category. And every time it's getting discussed, they seem to be lumped in together. And the point that was made is, if you look at Palmer, based on his numbers, and I know a lot of people don't like data, but I think when it's as obvious as what I'm about to say, they've got to kind of take notice of it. He's made 38 appearances, he scored 11 and has had 13 assists. And when you look at his contribution in minutes, he scores or assists every 92. Phenomenal record. For comparison, he's played approximately 800 minutes less than Jota did last season, yet he's only two goals and one assist behind Jota's numbers.
That's
wild. You look at Abada, he's already overtaken his goal contributions, having made 10 less appearances. Now, Stephen and I certainly are not saying that he's a better player than Jota. Absolutely not. Not saying that at all. But in terms of his goal contribution and his assists, JP, he has contributed this season. He's maybe just not on the best of form. Can he play a part between now and the end of the campaign, do you think?
I mean, there's no doubt about it. He's got the ability to do something exceptional. And he has done stuff exceptional this season, but can he do it in the sort of the middle of a really, really pressurised title fight? It's all very well showboating in August, September and everything else, or October, and then he's got the high of playing in the Champions League, so maybe that was kind of lifting his game in a way that he hadn't lifted it previously. I don't know, totally speculating. But he obviously has got the ability to do something, but so is James Forrest. That's what I've kind of said all along. James Forrest has always possessed the ability, and I'm pretty sure I said months ago that James Forrest would score a crucial goal in this. So it's disrespectful to speak about the way
I knew someone had said it. JP, it was you. You said Forrest was going to do something crucial between the point where you've said it and the end of the season.
Basically to sort of stop this kind of anti, not that it's going to stop it, people are going to think about the way they want to think about James Forrest, but I just really stuck in my throat the way that people were talking about him. You know, fair enough if you don't like the guy, but I mean, to some of the stuff that's said online about James Forrest is just so disrespectful, so out of order. It's wild to me that you would be a Celtic supporter and say the things that you say about X, Y, and Z player. But just looking back, talking about Liam Scales again, but just looking back to what I consider to be the true nadir of this season, when I left Celtic Park that day wondering where we were going, and it was when we got beat off Hearts 2-0. Mm-hmm. And the team that day, and as proof that it's a team that loses a game, not one player loses you the game. If anybody's going back to that game saying that's Liam Scales' fault that we lost that game, then I'm sorry, I don't agree with that. The team that day was Hart, Johnston, Carter Vickers, Scales, Taylor, O'Reilly, McGregor, Turnbull, Johnston, Furuhashi, Palmer. That was the team. That's a strong team on paper. That should be beating Hearts at home. So why did that not happen that day? I don't know. They took two chances, and nobody in that ground that day could see us scoring three. But then you go to the Tynecastle game where we start well, Yang gets sent off, an abysmal decision. I still maintain that, despite the fact that there's Hearts fans that will scream at you till they're blue/maroon in the face that it was the right decision and it was a dangerous tackle and blah, 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 despite the fact that I think the exact same thing happened in the Rangers game at the weekend. with the keeper, got a yellow card, which is what
barely got a mention, JP.
Which is what Roger said should have happened to Yang. He was like, right, a yellow card, we move on. A straight red for that, seriously. Mm-hmm. And then we find out that the penalty that we were given shouldn't have been a penalty, right? Fair, it doesn't matter, we missed it anyway. But the fact is that it was also decided that Hart shouldn't have had a penalty in that game as well, which everybody said, including Rodgers, and he gets hauled up before the beaks to answer it for his criticism after the game. But I'm sorry, but getting a penalty just before half time when you're one man to the good at home mm-hmm. with a partisan crowd behind you is a huge, huge benefit to you. Like you can point and say, "Oh well, you shouldn't have had that penalty either." But we didn't take our chance and score that penalty. That's on us. But it's on them that they gave Hearts a penalty before half time because that goes in 0-0 at half time. In a parallel universe, one of your parallel universes, Kev, where does that second half leave us? Because we weren't in bad shape at ten men.
JP, you're completely right. If we get in nothing each half time, we take something for that game. We do take something for that game.
I agree with that.
But what really gets me now that these 26 mistakes come out, right? Mm. So it says that we shouldn't have got the penalty kick. So why are the 26 guys, and some of them are repeat offenders, still getting games?
Exactly. Really good.
Why? Why? That is a problem, eh? That is a problem there. You've got an independent guy comes out and goes, he made a mistake. That's all right, we'll give him the Celtic Rangers game next week. He's fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What? What's that about?
There's also this thing, Kev, you were talking about, you know, news narratives, mainstream narratives, etc. I've been told off for using that word too often, but I've not found an alternative yet. So let me know in the comment section if there's a better word to use than narrative. Alan Morrison was going on about, you know, the narrative being that Rangers, you know, have had more wrong decisions against them than any other club. And it just shows you, right, when the data stacks up that Rangers, not only this season, but over a period of time, have benefited more than ever with regards to the decision-making process of Scottish football officials. Yet they're trying to make out, JP, that they've been hard done by because of the VAR decisions. It is absolutely abysmal reporting, but also abysmal refereeing. And Kev's right. And, you know, I've asked this question before. Is there any other league in the world where football fans are at tenterhooks to find out who's going to be actually officiating their games? I mean, I don't know where else in the world that's such a big deal, JP. I know there's leagues that fans are unhappy with the VAR and its introduction and how it's been used. But I don't think anybody in European football looks upon the announcement of referees like Scottish football fans and Celtic fans, particularly, JP, because it's a massive part of the outcome of the game.
Ah, it's a nonsense. It's an absolute nonsense. And it's probably safe money for beating to get the cup final, isn't it? I mean,
who's going to get the Rangers game? Who is going to get it? Probably it'll be within that sphere of beating, and you know, Robertson will be in there. I mean, these guys, Dickinson will be in there. These guys will get that game, and they can make a massive difference to it.
If it is Dickinson, then that's a concern, considering some of the screenshots that were flying around yesterday. Because if they're made up, fine. I'll be happy to acknowledge that I look or sound foolish by bringing them up. But if they're real, that's a bit worrying.
The thing is, JP, we started off the show talking about AI. Artificial intelligence is phenomenal as we sit here. I mean, you know, just off the top of my head, they could do something like, you know, put out a fake interview just to prove that somebody's alive, for example, you know. And they put it out and we'd all believe it. Well, some people wouldn't. But in relation to the images, right, they're real images. I've counted all their fingers. They've all got 10 fingers and everything, JP. There's no mistakes in the images you're talking about.
Well, can't be then. If the Rangers fans, they can't have 10 fingers.
No, that's a telltale sign. Absolutely, that's a telltale sign.
They're made up.
Yep. But no, it's a big concern, and it shouldn't be. And it's going to continually be a concern until they absolutely change the way that Scottish refereeing is approached. And the big thing for me, yes, you can get full-time refs in, etc., but also you can't mark your own homework. And they're going about independent bodies coming in, JP. The SFA marks its own homework in terms of the performance of our officials. The performance of our officials is so bad that UEFA and FIFA don't want to, you know, employ Scottish referees for the big tournaments because they're so bad, and I think that speaks volumes. Jungle Lion, welcome to the show. After watching the Dortmund yellow wall last night, are Celtic missing a trick here? Yeah, I think they are. And I think that this season, JP, we've probably been set back quite a bit, actually, because there were plans, obviously, with Boys, Green Brigade, North Curve, to do something similar, and they wanted to showcase it again at the women's games, and they were knocked back. So as brilliant as a spectacle as it is, I don't see it happening in the near future, JP, and I think that's unfortunate.
Well, it does look amazing. I watched a bit of the game last night. I watched the snooker and then turned over for some of the Dortmund game, and like, there was absolutely incredible sight to see that bouncing after they scored their really good goal against PSG. It's quite mad to think. Has there ever been an all-German European Cup final or Champions League final?
Munich, Dortmund, and the last time, was at Wembley? Munich 1-1-0. I think that was one of Klopp's last games for Dortmund as a manager.
Right.
It's wee Baldy boy scored. Iron Robin scored 1-1.
Well, it's in the cards, or in the cards, that it could be again, couldn't it? It'd be someone else. And nobody would have saw that coming at the start of the season. I think everybody had Man City winning it again, which would have been hell on earth for me, to be honest. But I'm delighted that there's going to be potentially a final of that sort. But with regards to the fan thing, I think I'm just glad that the issues were resolved with the Green Brigade and the Boys, because that was really, really hampering us in that time period.
Yep.
Absolutely no doubt about it that was impacting on the atmosphere and motivation for the players. I know people say it shouldn't matter, but I've said it a million times. Guy came up to me at the Martin O'Neill thing last week and said, "You said repeatedly that Rangers won the league because there was no fans in the stadium, and they've not won it since then." So, I mean, if they were that great a side that season, why didn't they swipe us aside the following season? They had a head start when we lost, three of the first however many games under Ange Postecoglou, and if they were the swashbuckling side that they were supposed to be, where is it? So the guy also, by the way, really nice guy, Jerry, had no idea about the fact that I was a friend or a fan of Frightened Rabbit, and he was like, "Do you think me and my wife, we got into them late?" He was like, "Do you think we'll ever see another band like that again?" I was like, "No, it was lightning in a bottle. Like, that was a one-off." So it was really nice to have a conversation with him about that, because it was unexpected. I was just expecting to talk about Celtic, and then he brought up that, and I was like, "Whoa." Where'd that come from? So shout out to Jerry McCabe and Trin.
Thing is though, JP, I was asked this question yesterday around the Celtic state of mind, and obviously you appeared before the pandemic. Kevin and I were on the very first show back in 2017, but a lot of the audience became aware of us during the lockdown, where people were looking for content and somewhere to go to talk about their specialist subject being Celtic, and it built a wee community online. Now, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, making pals online was always kind of viewed with a bit of suspicion. Remember that? You must be weird if you met online, but that's just normal now. And I think during that pandemic and during the lockdown, it was really the intention to do something where people are in the same room again, JP. I mean, you, with your football and your music, double done for yourself. And it's just tremendous now to be able to go out and do an event and do a gig and have a room full of people, and to have that wee look out and just soak it up for a moment that there's 350 plus Celtic fans on that same room out to have a good night. And by the way, the majority of them will only be there because of Axon and being aware of it through Axon, but some of them just want to go and see Martin O'Neill. So a tremendous night, and it is great to actually put a face a name. And thanks to whoever it was I spoke to that said I look younger in real life. I'm going to run with that one. Thank you very much for mentioning that. That's Kev just coughing in the background. Right, Barry Smith, I'm going to bring you in. We should bring refs from English Championship, pay them the cash they are. FIFA refs, just the same as the refs went on strike. Right, just the same as when the refs went on strike. I think it was Lawrence that mentioned that it would be quite easy to have some kind of alliance with a league or a number of leagues whereby you can use the refs. I mean, the Scottish refs throughout the season undertake various different tasks for FIFA, for example, and you know, they'll get flown out here, there, or wherever to do jobs, and then they come back to Scotland. Kev, I think it's great. It's a brilliant, you know, for me, it's a brilliant suggestion. Scottish football won't do it. That's the thing. We don't do change. We don't do things that are innovative. And I have no belief that they're ever going to change the way that referees are appointed, trained, the fact that they're part-time. I don't see it happen, ever.
No, I didn't see it happening because our club only pushed for it happening because they're part of the corruption of the Scottish game. The corruption of the Scottish game makes the Celtic board money. And they're quite happy to go along with it, and they're quite happy not to change it because it's the divide and conquer type thing that they use. Eh? I mean, you have a look at it. There's no Scottish referees going to the Euros when there used to be loads of Scottish referees in these World Cups all the time. There's not even a Scottish referee in Gladiators. How bad is that? I mean,
Where's your personal kind of ambition there, though? If you're a ref, Kev, right, and you're part of this culture, and we'll come back to the comment you were saying there about corruption just so that we can clarify what you mean by it, but the culture within Scottish football, the culture within Scottish refs, to do it this way, and if you're doing it that way, it equals you're not actually being rewarded with a big tournament. Surely, as a ref, you want to be rewarded. You want to get that accolade.
The reason is they're quite happy to get promoted to do they get over promoted far too quickly from certain organisations within the SFA. They all come from a small geographic area which has been proved, and it's who you know, and that's how you get promoted. And these guys have probably got no ambition apart from getting a couple of free pint, then get on the steak pie and 500 quid a night speakers tour and talk about the time they didn't give Celtic a penalty because we're up at takes.
We don't do steak pies, by the way, JP. I was going to just throw that in there.
That is the height of their ambition. How many referees have you heard now that have came out are on that steak pie tour that will tell an audience jokes about the time they never gave a penalty against Celtic, or they tell a Celtic player this? That is the height of their ambition. They're not absolutely interested in going anywhere else. And it's the same with the SFA. The SFA have got no ambition. JP mentioned the snooker, and unlucky to John Higgins, I thought he was great against Mart Allen the other night, one of the best games of snooker I've ever watched. And John might watch this, being of a Celtic state of mind, so keep going, John, if you are watching it. Barry Hearn is the biggest missed opportunity that Scottish football's ever had. That's the bottom line. And the SFA will never let an independent regulator come in because it's the same way any sort of deep-seated institution anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter if you go in there to actually kick things up, you eventually just become the same because it's institutionalised. There's institutionalised bigotry in Scotland, and it's always going to be there unless something drastically changes. And our club didn't want to change it either.
On that point, before I go to JP, right, about our club and I want to change it, are you talking about keeping a challenge alive? Are you talking about, you know, comments made by the then president of the SFA, Alan McRae, when Celtic were winning trebles for fun, that it was boring and that Scottish football needed a strong Rangers? Is that what you're talking about? The fact that our club buy into that or play into that kind of, I'm not going to use the word narrative, I've been given a new word, portrayal. Or chronicle, there you go.
Okay,
is that what you're talking about when you're talking about corruption, Kev?
Aye, I mean, you have a look at it. Our chairman, current chairman, told us that Rangers being liquidated would cost us £5 million. And he was fuming about the fact that it was going to cost Celtic £5 million. Our chairman wanted Rangers back in the top flight after they got liquidated, because it was good for business. The Scottish game is heavily weighted in favour of both Celtic, of the Old Firm, because it's the only thing it sells, and it's the only thing it makes money, and absolutely the Scottish game. And our club are complicit in this. Competition is good for the game, and our club will do anything to keep the competition alive, and that means they will not push for change We have a financial advantage. Rangers have a financial advantage over the whole of Scottish football as well. Both clubs do have. It's Scottish football's heavily weighted in favour of two clubs, but Rangers have also got the other weighted favour of they're not as rich as us. They're maybe bigger than us, support-wise, in Scotland. They're not as rich as us, but they've got the institutionalised favour as well that they'll always favour Rangers to keep them competitive.
Right.
The game's corrupt, and we're part of it.
JP, I'm going to come to you, right, because the word corrupt's strong, but we've seen in football in the past, corruption exists, right, and some might say it's rife. I mean, you've just got to even look at the very highest level of football globally to know that that does exist. But there's going to be people watching this show saying, oh, you're off your head, you're paranoid, you're this, you're that, keeping this alive.
No paranoid enough.
What would you say to that, JP, in relation to it? Because I think there's a part of me that's, as a Celtic fan, wants Celtic to be the best we can possibly be. And I don't care if that damages your nearest or your oldest or your newest rival. It doesn't. I don't care. I don't give them a second thought, JP, as a Celtic fan. But what Kev's suggesting is that in terms of the bean counters at Celtic Park, they reckon that to have that rivalry is good for business. Right, absolutely. I mean, personally, I would much rather to see in my lifetime Celtic playing their football elsewhere, because I think that in terms of Scottish football, Celtic are an anomaly. You look at that balance sheet, Celtic should not be making that level of money in Scottish football. And if we want to progress and we want to compete in Europe, it won't be here. It won't be within that Scottish game that I think Kevin has quite accurately described. Where are you in this argument? I mean, this wasn't something we were going to discuss, but the discussion has led us here. Where are you in this discussion?
I mean, I couldn't honestly sit here and say the same as Kevin, be like, it is this or it is that. Like, and deliver it as what Kev believes to be fact. That's based on what Kev's read and watched and everything else that forms that opinion. What I would say is that were it to be presented that was fact, I wouldn't be surprised, because there's been so much that has happened in my lifetime that points towards that being the case. I was talking this morning, actually, about the existence of UFOs. UFOs have always been widely kind of mocked and it doesn't exist, but I was talking about the fact that a US defence official has whistleblown on the fact that they do have alien craft in possession of the US government somewhere, whether it's Roswell or whatever. But so when something like that, if something was to eventually come out where something's proved against Crawford Allen. I mean, why did Crawford Allen come out and comment on the Kyogo offside and yet has commented on nothing else? Uh-huh. Like, why was that a soundbite that had to be made by him at that time? That those sort of things feed into this narrative that.
And I think he was on holiday, JP. He was on a family holiday at the time. Yeah.
Even more mental. But I just think that there's like the Jim Farry thing with Cadetti, that was in my lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. Happened. Absolutely.
I mean, that happened. Like, you could, whoever you are, you could come back and go, ah, you're talking. No, but that actually happened. It's been proved. The guy was found guilty of holding up a transfer that would affect Celtic's season. Why? Why was he doing that? Just because he felt like doing it that day? I don't think so. But that would be where I'm at. If it was to ever come out and there was a proper thing blown, the whole thing open. And the way things are going with modern technology and media and everything else and emails and everything's stored and everything else, you know as well as I do that information could become public knowledge at some point if there was anything overly damning that proved everything that Kev's saying there.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to those decisions that were reviewed on the VAR thing. You've got to have a fibre of sympathy for Hibs. Hibs got given a penalty against them that they've said yesterday wasn't a penalty. Everybody that watched that back, that penalty that Hearts got at Easter Road, I think it was, and Hibs are winning 1-0 at the time, they've missed out in the top six by 1 point.
Yeah,
that's impacted their season massively. And I know Hibs are an absolute bag of frogs this season, and you know you don't know what you're going to get in terms of a performance out of them. They've fallen off cliffs and then climbed back up and then fallen off the same cliff again. But that in that one individual game where points were on the line, Hearts got a massive get out of jail free card, and it's been proved that it was the wrong decision by referees who have been able to watch it repeated times in a wherever they are. It's the same with the Wata handball. Like, you watch that a million times. Like, how have you come to the conclusion that that's a penalty when you've got the? It's not as if it's a knee jerk. Right, there you go. That's a penalty, and they've got no time to look at it. The whole point in VAR is that they get a chance to look at it 2, 3, 4, 5 times, and if it takes a minute or 2 minutes, and they come to the right decision, then everyone's fine with that. But to come to the to take a couple of minutes and then come to the wrong decision is bananas to me, and is why everybody, not just us, are going nuts about VAR being a thing in our game. So,
and I'm glad, JP, that, you know, in a way, that other teams are angry about it, because it's not just a Celtic paranoia thing. And by the way, talking about UFOs, before we move on, they've renamed it, haven't they? So that, because UFO has no credibility, so they've renamed it, yeah. But as soon as you said that, it took me back to your pal Stuart Braithwaite's book, and Spaceships Over Glasgow is what it was called, of course, the founding member of Mogwai. And he was talking in his book, wasn't he, about the fact that there were so many UFO sightings above some place near to Falkirk. Where was it again, guys? Bonnybridge. But there was like a community get-together, like there was councillors and all that there to discuss what was going to happen. And Stuart went to it, and he says there was two guys that were like really asking really difficult questions and making a nuisance of themselves. And it turned out, Kev, that it was Arab Strap, who of course were from Falkirk. Brilliant, loved that. Sorry, Kev, I cut you off. You were going to say something there.
No. What you would talk about, right? We need to be better than the referees, and we can't. When we have had this decisions and that go against us, but we've got a game on Saturday where VAR could make a massive difference, and I've often wondered if Rodgers, even though he came out and rightly called out beating, and as JP points out, surely his game suspension now must be rescinded because he was proved right.
He gets to play on Saturday.
There was a financial fine as well, was there not? Am I right in saying that there was a fine?
When Rodgers
called out that bad decision, there was a fine, as well as getting taken up to the beaks and all the rest of it. That, in fact, Kev, was the day or the week that we used the Dermot Desmond with the flamethrower. And I'm going to use that because I'm going to say to you, at the time leading up to it, we were getting all the word that, you know, we're really going to take this seriously, we're going to pull them over the hot coals over this one. It seemed as though we just accepted it with a whimper. Did you get that impression as well, Kev? Were we strong enough as a club?
No, we got John Beaton in the next game, so of course we weren't strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
And since we've had him since, and we've already had the start that he doesn't book opposition players against Celtic.
Yeah.
We've already had that's already been proved. So I've often wondered if Rodgers and his the lead up to the game against Hearts will be going like that, didn't he give the referee an option? Like Alistair Johnson at Ibrox. Blatant dive, still got a penalty kick against them. I'm wondering if the coaching staff are going to the players now, do not give the referee or VAR an absolute option to give a 50-50 decision or a 40-60 decision or anything like that. Eh? We just need to go out there and win the games now. I'm going to borrow Ian's quote. I'm not looking for unicorns for this team anymore. I'm just looking for them to win games of football. And that's what we really need today on Saturday.
Kev, you're giving me a title and an AI-generated image for tomorrow's show. Thank you. It's going to involve unicorns. Brilliant. Listen, what I would say, even though everything that we've discussed there is relevant, absolutely, Celtic are in this position at the moment this season, JB, because we've not been good enough. Because we've sold over a period of last season and the pre-season too many good players and we've not replaced them. So our recruitment wasn't good enough. We've not played well enough. As a club, we've fallen out with fan groups and we didn't sort it out quickly enough. A lot of what's happened this season and the fact that it's so close this season is down to Celtic. But we're always going to mention the bad officiating because it does contribute. But it's not the sole reason we are where we are, JP. We've had a bad season and a lot of that's been self-induced, hasn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's been a frayed season at best, where there's been times where you've heard people saying they want Joe Hart out in January.
I know.
Now, Joe Hart's been lauded as a potential player of the season, but
how many people say get rid of Jamesy Forrest in January, JP?
So many people were saying at the start of the season, not even giving Joe Hart a chance this season, just going, we should never have kept Joe Hart on for another season. We should have spent the money, got a new keeper. People wanted them gone in January and a new keeper bought in January. What does that do to the team morale and the structure of the team? Roger stuck to his guns, was like, nah, I would be very surprised if a goalkeeper was even on his shopping list in January. I think a left back and a striker was, and he got one of them, and he got a winger in because the wingers that we got in weren't good enough. So I think the mere fact that he took over from Postecoglou and was trying to fill that void. The Japanese players had a good relationship with Ange. It would seem that most of the team had a good relationship with Ange, and then suddenly you've got a guy coming in who's left previously, come back from the English Premier League, and nobody knows that much about him, really. The only people that knew him was Callum McGregor, James Forrest, and Scott Bain, Ralston. That's it. Everybody else is he's a brand new person to deal with. And that in itself, which is why you've got to give credit to them in the sense that they had to replace their PE teacher in November with an actual manager. And that actual manager has turned things around for them to an extent. Obviously, we've yet to see if we can take it right to the end or not, but he got them on a run, topped their Europa League group, all the rest of it. So you've got to give credit where credit's due, because they've had to deal with disruption as well. Certainly, I'm not buying the fact that we're just supposed to forget that Michael Beale was the manager for the first few months of the season. He was the great white hope of what was going to come, and he was the mastermind behind 55 and all of that nonsense, right? So you kind of just then write him off as like a kind of, it wasn't our fault that he was employed. But what I'm trying to do is give some sort of credit to them for dealing with disruption in their season. But we've dealt with disruption from the fact that we lost a manager who won a treble. And then the expectation is that Brendan Rodgers just arrives and then wins another treble. It's not as easy as that, as we found out losing at Kilmarnock in the League Cup. It just goes to show that the quadruple treble that we won is wild, that we won that. And that stands up there with the 2-9 in a row, as far as I'm concerned, because it's something that will never happen again. They're not doing that anytime soon, and we're not going to do it anytime soon again either, I don't think. So I think that needs to be remembered. It needs to be remembered that we won that quadruple treble in an empty stadium at Hampden, and none of us went to George Square. None of us were running around the streets in the middle of a lockdown, breaking the rules. But apparently that's what would have happened if we'd done anything significant at that time.
The thing that you said there regarding the quadruple treble, you're right, because no matter how good you are or how dominant you are, you're going to lose a cup game from time to time. And for that four seasons not to do that was just unbelievable. And I believe in my lifetime that we will see another 9, potentially 10 league titles in a row. Because I think over the piece, even when you're not at your best, as we have shown this season, you can do enough, unless it's a disastrous managerial appointment or it's a disastrous situation globally that you have got no control over. Celtic will win a 9 or a 10 again, I'm pretty sure, but a quadruple treble, I don't think so. I don't think that's possible. Liam Scales, by the way, here's one for you. We were talking about Liam Scales earlier on, guys. His contract, he's into the last year of his contract at the end of this month. We've not signed him up on an extended deal. I think there were discussions during the season that we would. There was interest from Anderlecht. They were talking about a £4.5 million bid for Liam Scales. Kevin Graham, is he a player that we need to sign up? You're back. Sorry.
The fact that I've took a big intake of breath means that I'm completely on the fence with that. Mm. It depends what happens in the summer. Again, being the sort of the club that I like us to think that we are, I think that he maybe deserves a new deal. But then is that just romantic nonsense? And if we want to do anything, should we be giving him a new deal? Because is he of the quality that we actually need? So I'm actually on the fence with that. I'll leave that up to Brendan.
I would say if you compare his situation to the likes of Anthony Ralston, right? Mm. William Scales has played a full season as a first team starter for Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
Would deserve a contract more than what Ralston contributed to get his new deal. Because Ralston was given a new deal, a one-year deal, when Ange came in before he virtually kicked a ball for him, and then got a new deal on top of that, didn't he? So the contribution that Anthony Ralston made in those two seasons with Ange Postecoglou pales into insignificance versus what Liam Scales has done this season. Do I want Liam Scales to be the starting centre-half next season when we're going into the Champions League? If we're going into the Champions League? No. I'd rather we sign somebody. But to have Scales as a squad player, if that is indeed what he wants to be at Celtic, he might not want to be. He might want to go and play first team football. If he's told, look, we're going to sign a centre half for $6 million in the summer, who we want to play alongside Carter Vickers, you'll be the number three. We're going to sell Navrotsky, we're going to sell Lager, Bielka, Stephen Welsh, who knows. But if that's the conversation that's had, then it's up to him whether or not he wants to be that person that fills in at centre half and plays 20, 30 games as opposed to 50. So, but I think he more than deserves a new contract, depending on how Celtic are going to use him come next season.
I agree. I think the defence, you could actually go right through that back five, actually. And I would say, JP, that Tony Ralston, who you've mentioned, Stephen Welsh, Liam Scales and Greg Taylor, for me, are all the same level, but they're a backup. They're not your first pick. And I think that's one of the issues we've got at the moment. We're playing two backups every week in that defence, because I don't think Taylor should be, if we want to progress as a football club, I don't think he's your left back, and I don't think Scales is your centre half either. But to have them as part of your squad and as backups, 100% you want that type of player in your squad. And I would give him a 3-year deal on the back of what he'd done this season. Definitely.
What I'm thinking, Paul, I've got a kind of feeling this is the end of something. And you've got Scales, you've got Greg Taylor coming to his end of his contract as well. I just feel there's a sort of an end coming. I don't know what it is. I just feel that this side and some of these players have now just been there a bit too long, and it's time the transitions,
the cycle,
start in the summer. There's a cycle, and I just think it's good. I just think it's coming to an end, and I think that we're just focused on getting to the end of the season, though, and seeing where it actually goes.
Keeper is massive, though, isn't it? Like,
Biggest signing of the season. Goalie. Because what I was going to say there, coming to an end, Kev, your record of being an unused substitute and Stirling came to an end because Scott Bain has been an unused sub 200 times for Celtic. I still think that's amazing. I don't think Bain is your backup goalie either, incidentally. I think you need a replacement for Joe Hart, and I think you need a backup as well. Whether or not we do that, I do not know. And Scott Bain can get another 50 unused substitute appearances under his belt next season as well. Gentlemen, I will not see you before the Hearts game. Sorry, Kev, on you go.
2 seconds. I just want to give a wee shout out to Kevin Macken, who has been in hospital for 15 months. Kevin left Stirling 27 years ago to go to Nottingham, and he founded the Pride of Erin CFC in Nottingham. And he came back up to Scotland, and he was the chairman of the disabled CFC as well. So he's been in hospital for the last 15 months, and he watches Axom every day. So, Kevin, keep the faith, mate, and hopefully Celtic date for you and all yours towards the end of the season. And thanks for watching, mate.
100%. Always appreciated. Wee prediction from you, JP. I know you love them. Hearts at the weekend.
Well, as a standalone game, I just want to beat them. I really don't care the score. I'd love it to be a real demolition job on them, because the way that they lorded it over us after the Tynecastle game still sticks in my throat. I really hope Maeda's back. Don't know who's playing in the right, if he plays in the left. How do you drop Forrest after scoring two goals like that and from a starting position? I don't know. Maybe a little bit harsh on Kuhn, given that Rodgers commented on the surface at Dundee and said that it affected the way that we played in that game. But I don't really think he could have much complaints if Forrest does start on the right and Maeda starts on the left. Kyogo was a bit off it in the Dundee game, I think. Does that mean Ida starts? I don't know. But ultimately, I just don't see a season where Hearts are taking more than 6 points off us. They've taken 6 points off us so far. It's a huge, huge game at Celtic Park. You've got to think everybody's going to be massively up for it. It will be the last 3 o'clock kickoff, I think, because surely the last game, the St Mirren game, will be 12:30. I've not actually looked.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, because I'm in Dunoon the night before it, and it's going to be an early departure to get back to Glasgow.
Yep. There you go, then. So it's the last 3 o'clock kickoff of the season. What's the next game? It is, because the next game after that's Rangers, and then you've got Kilmarnock away on the Wednesday night. So last 3 o'clock game, you just want everybody to be up and at it and behind the team, and you've got to think that the team are hugely motivated after the results against Hearts this season. I mean, all you need to do is show them both those games back to back and be like, right, go out and right that wrong. And,
definitely.
And let's not make Stephen Naismith out to be some sort of Guardiola incarnate or something, because he's proved, and they've rode their luck this season massively. In that week, they got two VAR decisions that impacted massively in their games against Hibs and against us. And so we're playing against VAR as well. Clearly, we're playing against VAR. If that information's getting put out like it was yesterday, and they're making mistakes on that level in games that matter, then we've got them to contend with on Saturday as well. But hopefully, like Kev said, don't give them any reason to err on the side of a 40-60 or anything like that. Just play the football that we know we can play, and we should beat them.
Yep, score 3 goals to make sure you don't drop in. James Cubbin, before I come to you, Kev, stuff out Shankland. Do not allow him, snuff, that's it, snuff out Shankland. Don't allow him to get any part of the play, and it's checkmate on the day. Nice to see that, James, checkmate. Kev, what about yourself?
I don't think they'll play well, but I think they'll win. I think it's finuity. I'm not expecting any ripping up trees performances. I think it'll be nervy, but I think we will actually win. And when we look back on it on Monday or Tuesday, or if you rewatch it, it'll probably be more comfortable than
I'm going to put my neck on the line. We're going to absolutely hammer them, and we're going to beat them 4-0. There you go, gentlemen. Thanks, everybody, for getting involved. 1,300 strong on the live stream. Thanks, everybody, if you're watching on Instagram. I know it's lonely over there at the moment. Big shout out to Reach Out, Keen Dip, and Come On, the Hoops Celtic, who were watching us live on the old Instagram as well. We will grow that audience, I'm pretty sure. All that's left for me to say thank you once again, JP Mason, and to Kevin Graham for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind. Podcast Network.